Welcome everyone to our session here this morning on optimizing the transmission system. I just want to thank everybody for taking the time to join us this morning. I know everyone's got a lot of things on the go, so we do appreciate you taking the time to join our conversation this morning. I'm Dennis Frelick. I'm the Vice President of Grid Reliability here at the ISO, for those who don't know myself. I'm going to have two leaders join us in the conversation today. Lei Zhang, she's our manager of grid analytics, and Dr. Amir Moramadi, he's our manager of system planning. And so the three of us will be sharing the conversation through this morning. Before we get into the content, we will go through a few logistics first, and I'm going to pass it to Jennifer Vollmer, our communications lead here, to cover those logistics for us.
Thanks, Dennis. Okay, so I know Zoom is not new to most of us, but I just want to take a moment to go through the different ways that you guys can ask questions and engage during this session. I just want to let you know if you're having any issues connecting or with the audio or anything like that, if you can send a note to stakeholderrelations@iso.ca and we'll have someone support you on that. Just a note that we are recording the audio for this session and we will be posting it to the initiatives page within 3 business days following our session. So if you have to drop off for any reason, that audio will be made available to you shortly. So for attendees, your audio will be enabled for question and answer if you raise your hand. Right now there's no video, you'll only see the video for the panelists. And we can unmute you for questions if you need to ask a question during the Q&A period. There's 2 Q&As during this session, and there's 2 ways to ask questions. So the first way is to raise your virtual hand, which you'll see at the bottom of your panel. And I will come over to your raised hand, and I'll let you know that you're unmuted, and you can go ahead and ask your question to the panelists. The second way is to type in a written Q&A in the Q&A box, and I will read those aloud for the panelists to respond to. So we obviously would love to engage in a dialogue. So if you're able to raise your hand and ask your question to be able to clearly articulate your questions, that's probably the most preferred method. But obviously, if you're more comfortable typing in your question, I'm happy to read it for you. One other note, just before you ask your question, if you could introduce yourself and your organization, just so we can all be on the same page. And I think that is about it. Oh, there's a few of us here. I think there's about 4 people calling in on the phone line. So for you guys, if you want to raise your hand, I believe it should work to do *9 and then *6 is to unmute and mute. So I know sometimes that gets a little bit complicated, but I'm happy to test that out if you guys have questions. And again, for the FOIP slide. So we just want to make you guys aware, like I said, that we're recording the audio for this session and it will be posted. So if you have any concerns or issues with that, please reach out to the contact information available on this slide. And I think that's it, Dennis. So back to you.
Thanks, Jennifer. I see we already have a question about chat being disabled. So
typically, unless there's something that's wrong functionality-wise, it would be preferred if either you could type in a question to the Q&A or raise your hand to ask the question. But Chris, if there's anything else that you need the chat for, just send me a note or an email to Stakeholder Relations. Thanks.
Okay. Well, thanks. I wanted to start the session by just sharing a few of the key messages for this session. And we obviously at the ISO, we recognize there's been considerable transmission investment over the last several years that's been made in this province. And so we are wanting to focus our efforts on improving our methods going forward here as to how we can optimize the existing transmission system. At the same time, respecting the clear policy framework we've got in place here in the province and the market structure. And so as we go forward, we're looking at maximizing the use of the existing system and working towards timing new infrastructure closer to when it's needed. And we'll go through a little bit as to how we're our approaches to do that. Both of those here in this session. Part of what we've been looking at is new methodologies and tools and approaches to help us improve in that area. And we're going to share some of those approaches and methodologies here in this session. And we're obviously open for feedback as we go, because we will continue to see and seek ways to improve as we go forward. I do consider this a bit of a journey as we look at new methodologies and approaches to improve our optimization of the existing transmission system and timing new infrastructure closer to when we need it. Amir, if you can go to the next slide. What some of the key objectives for us for this session are, it's really about sharing our approaches, and we'll go through some detail around the approaches around congestion assessment, around milestones and triggering of construction, which is about trying to time infrastructure to when it's needed, as well as our approach to the utilization of any Section 15 to exception applications, which is a part of the regulation that allows us to enable exceptions should we consider it appropriate. And so as we go through the conversation, we'll try to share our approaches to those three areas. And again, at the end, we'll have a couple, as Jennifer indicated, we'll have a couple of stops for Q&A as we go through the session, so you don't have to remember all your questions to the very end. And at the end, we will also take some time for Q&A, as people obviously will need some time to digest what we're sharing, and some other questions may come up as we get towards the end. So I'll reiterate again, we're interested in your feedback, in your thoughts. We totally recognize that different stakeholders on this session will have different perspectives and want to share different questions. And so we're very open to hearing those different perspectives as we go forward. Amir, next slide. Just for clarity, we're not going to get into questions around specific projects. We'll consider that out of scope, as well as we're not going to debate potential changes to the regulatory framework or the current market structure. That's not what this conversation is about. And we clearly won't go into any questions about projects or processes that we've got in the regulatory process right now, or that are in the hearing process, given those situations. So, and we're not to deep dive into the connection process. If there's questions there, we had connection process session a couple weeks ago or a week ago. So if there's questions in that respect, we'll take those through ongoing engagement in those sessions. So I will moderate the session here and direct traffic for questions as we go. Hopefully we can have a good discussion as we go forward. Next slide, Amir. As you well know, this is probably not the first stakeholder session that you've been engaged with since we've launched our engagement framework, which we introduced here in late 2019. We totally recognize that the decisions we make here at the ISO, shape Alberta's industry. And so we do value your feedback as a key part of our decision-making. Our framework for stakeholder engagement is all about guiding our approach, our engagement approach. And you can see our engagement principles on this slide. And so we continue to seek ways to improve our engagement with stakeholders. And so we, as I said three times already, probably more, we're interested in your feedback, both on the content we go through, but also on our engagement process here. So we'll ask you at the end of the session, we'll ask you for your feedback on how this session went for you through a brief survey that we'll send out to you. And I'd ask that you take, the couple, 3 minutes to respond to that survey, because we do value your feedback on our engagement process as well. Now, so with that overview of our key messages and objectives, I'm going to pass it over to Amir to take us through the first part of the discussion on optimizing the transmission system. So over to you, Amir.
Okay, thank you, Dennis. Good morning, everyone. Again, my name is Amir Mohtamedi. I'm manager of system planning team. In this part of the presentation, we will talk about some of the tools that we use for the optimization of the transmission system, and we will provide some information about each of those. So I'm on a slide 9. In a slide 9, as you can see, we have listed some of the key tools that we use for optimizing the transmission system. So let's have a look at these tools. And as I mentioned, in the following slide, we will spend a little bit more time for each tool. One of them is conducting congestion assessment. Obviously, in this session, we're going to spend a lot of time to talk about how we use that, where we use that, what are the tools that we use that for, what does it entail, and so on and so forth. Another one is publishing capability reports and maps to provide information for the stakeholders on where are the available capability. One other is additional use of deterministic capability-based planning assessment. We'll explain why that is important in a few minutes. Use of remedial action schemes or RASs to manage congestion under contingencies is another one. We'll explain when we use it and how we use it and what are the things to consider. When it comes to utilization of transmission system, using new technologies is another tool that can help us to better utilize the transmission system. And lastly, a staging and construction milestone to break the project's future development when possible to different stages and use milestone to control the timing is another piece. So as I mentioned, now we will spend a little bit more time on each of these. In terms of the planning capability reports and maps, what it does, it provides information for the stakeholders on the capability so that if you have a generation application, you would know where are the available capability on the transmission system. I assume some of you folks have seen the previous capability reports that we published on our website. The last capability information that we provided was in 2020 long-term plan. In that, we provided capability information for South, Central, East, Edmonton region, Northeast, and Northwest to see where are the available capabilities for connecting generation without having any new transmission development. In next year, we will be focusing on enhancing our capability information by providing more granularity, going towards substation-level capability information, and visualizing those information through GIS mapping. The other tool that we talk about is utilizing deterministic capability-based planning assessment. And what it means is instead of having a snapshot of the system and highlighting only the system violation for that snapshot, we are trying to, when it's appropriate, use capability-based information to show what is the system capability when we talk and when we explore our deterministic capability work. What it provides flexibility and robustness. So we don't have to change that information every time there is a new information. For example, it would help us to have less update as an example when there is a change in the forecast. In slide 11, we talk about a few more tools. One of the tools that we talked about was RAS. We, as I mentioned, we use RAS to maximize the transmission capability. The use of RAS is primarily to address system performance under abnormal system condition. By abnormal system condition, we mean system conditions that are not normal, so meaning that not all of the transmission elements are in service. So that could be typically an N-1 condition, but it could be condition beyond that too. It is very effective to address the congestion when we are talking about N-1 condition. So for example, if you have a contingency or an outage, instead of taking action pre-contingency with the RAS, we would wait until that outage happens and then the RAS will take care of the congestion. One thing to take into account is there is limits in terms of how much supply can be curtailed with the single RAS, for example, that cannot go beyond the most severe single contingency in Alberta. And the other thing is, at the end of the day, having multiple RASes will provide operational complexity. So we would take into account such complexities when we put together or propose a RAS for the system to manage congestion. We also talk about enabling new technologies. What we are thinking in that terms is investigating different technologies to more effectively control the power flow and optimize the transmission system. We are also taking into account exploring methods for things such as dynamic line ratings when it's proper and appropriate, and we are confident about its performance. One thing to add in this area is the ISO also take into account the application of non-wire solution for deferring the transmission development, obviously when it's appropriate and effective, considering the framework and system performance and so on and so forth. And lastly, in slide 12, we explore a little bit more about staging and milestone. So we talk about utilizing a staging and milestone as another tool for optimizing the transmission system. When practical, we stage the transmission developments, balancing different things such as reliability, cost, social and land impacts to defer the transmission expenditure when possible. And also again, where it's appropriate, we use things such as construction milestone to control the timing of the transmission development. So that construction milestone will say, once a certain milestone achieved, start the construction of the transmission development as opposed to starting it right away. And this would help to de-risk the timing of transmission need. So with this information, now I'll pass it to my colleague Lei Shung to talk about the congestion assessment and the different aspects of that.
Thank you, Amir. Good morning, everyone. My name is Lei Shung. I'm gonna walk through the congestion assessment with you. We're gonna talk about the related terminology, typical congestion statistics, and high-level methodology. Please turn to page 14. Next page, Amir. In congestion assessment, there are three related terms. There's constraint, congestion, and curtailment. When the system has constraints, it has limitation to protect equipment and meet the reliability standards. Congestion results from constraint and it's related to inert generation. It happens when the system has limited line capability to transfer the inert energy without exceeding system limit. So congestion, when there's a congestion, the generation will be curtailed to relieve the constraints. Please know that not all the constraints lead to congestion. Let's turn to the next page and use an example. Page 15. In this hypothetical example, there's a study area is connected to the Alberta internal system through some transmission line with high capability and one transmission line with lower capability. The study area is able to transfer power to the system. And then there's unexpected losses of transmission element and causes thermal overload in the transmission line with a lower capability. In this situation, if the system controller is able to reconfigure the transmission system, for example, open the transmission line with lower capability and relieve constraint, then there's no congestion. Versus if the inert generation has to be curtailed to relieve constraint, then we have a situation of congestion. Please turn to page 16. So what is the congestion assessment we refer here? Congestion assessment offers us the tool set so we can model load, generation, and transmission in a probabilistic way. It takes consideration of the characteristic and anticipated availability of generation assets. It models the load and the generation dynamics. It creates economic dispatches and produces power flow statistics. In our engineering study, They're very detailed technical analysis. It helps us to ensure compliance with reliability standards. They are deterministic in nature. With the additional statistics provided by congestion assessment, it helps the ISO to understand the likelihood of constraints and the resulting congestion degrees in different levels. It enhances our capability to optimize the transmission utilization. I'm gonna use the next slides. Please turn to page 17 to standardize some of the typical statistics we used. So we can have event, which means a single occurrence, either constraint or congestion. We have a graph here. The green line represents the unconstrained energy flow. The dashed line represents the limits for the transmission. So when the unconstrained power flow is exceeding the limits, we have event for congestion or constraint. The frequency refers to the number of events in a year. So in this graph, we can see there's two places. The unconstrained emerald power flow is larger than the limits. So we have the frequency as two. Each event has a start time and end time and has a duration. In our first event here, it starts from April, ends in May. So the duration, which is the number of hours per event, is 720 hours. I'm gonna use slide 18 to talk about magnitude. We can have a different way to measure the magnitude as it related to constraint, congestion, and curtailment. Typically, we have three ways to measure them. One is about the differences between the limit, the dashed line, to the green lines, the height. Or we can measure the magnitude as the congested energy for the transmission line or the curtailment related to generation units. Depending on the type of study and the availability of information, different magnitude might be used. For example, if we're doing a long-term study, it might be more meaningful to produce the magnitude as it related to congestion, not the curtailment. Because the congestion assessment is a probabilistic analysis, we're able to calculate different statistics as it related to magnitude, duration, and frequency. We can do minimum, average, maximum, and different percentiles. Please turn to the next page, page 19. I'm gonna use page 19, 20, and 21 to walk through the high-level methodology. In congestion assessment, we use a tool called Aurora. It's provided by Energy Exampler. Aurora is actually one of the commonly used market dissemination tools by most utility companies in this province. The ISO has used Aurora for quite a few years. We use it to produce the long-term outlook generation forecast. We use it for different market analysis. In congestion assessment, we utilize the assumptions from those market models. We have very detailed assumptions related to generation. We try to mimic how they're gonna offer to the market, the physics, how they're gonna ramp up, ramp down, whether they're gonna be limited energy related to seasonality, whether there's a correlation between the on-site generation and the on-site load. What about the interchanges and the cost related information, such as fuel cost, emission cost, step out cost, you name it. Generation and load assumptions are critical to congestion assessment. In addition to utilize the long-term outlook, our corporate forecast, quite often we have different scenarios and sensitivities developed for the study area. And this try to capture different drivers for load development, generation development, different dispatch behaviors, and use those analyses to help us understand how uncertainties and variabilities would impact the congestion risks. With all those information, a ghost in Aurora, it starts with magic. It calculated the offer prices, the offer bid, and construct the merit order in an hourly basis. When it compared to the load forecast, it produced economic dispatch. I would like to use slide 20 to give you an example. In this example, it's a very simplified system. We have five components. On the top left is the list of the available generators. In this example, we only have four units, one wind units, three gas units. The number shown here lists the offer prices, the available supply. The bottom left is the amount of demand to serve at the hour. The right, the top right is the supply curve. In this example, it has total supply around 1,000 megawatts, which is the sum of the available supply from the four units. The offer price ranges from $0 to $50. And the bottom right is the simplified merit order. Essentially, it's the ranking from the lowest offer price to the highest offer price from the available supply. In these cases, as we compare with the demand, 750, the lowest dispatch cost, the wind, is fully dispatched, 200. Then gas one, again, 300 megawatts, fully dispatched. The next one, gas two, is partially dispatched until the load 750 is served. The gas two is the marginal units and the offer price is the resulting pool price. Gas three is not in merit and is not dispatched. This is a simplified illustration of what we call economic dispatches, and it has the objective to minimize the overall production cost in the system. Now let's go back to page 19. In addition to the economic dispatches, Aurora has also built-in risk engine. We can assign distribution to different variables and perform Monte Carlo simulation and produce different statistics. In congestion assessment, in addition to monitoring those market fundamentals of load and generation as we just explained, we're adding another layer to capture the transmission side. We have each of the load and the generation mapped to its own substation to the bus level. And then we also have the topology, contingency, monitoring line, HVDC power order, and operational limits captured on the nodal model side. In Aurora, it's a DC modeling, which is a simplified power flow analysis. DC power flow analysis is very typical for the hourly nodal market simulation. With that, we can produce the hourly flow on the monitoring line and then compare with the limits and the generation dispatches and calculate the congestion statistics. Let's turn to page 21 and use the same example to illustrate. I'm gonna do some simple math with you so we can refresh our mind in the morning, shall we? So in this example, we still have the same four units, the wind, gas one, two, and three. This is a totally simplified example. We have assumed no losses. All the lines have equivalent impedance. Because all the units are connecting to the simplified topology using radio lines. As such, transmission line one, two, three, and four has the power flow equal to the amount of the power injection from each power plant. We have transmission line one, 200, transmission line two, 300, transmission line three, 250, and the fourth one, transmission four, is zero because gas three is not in merit. And then let's do another simple math. The transmission six, which is the sum of transmission three and four, we have the 250 megawatts here. If we know the limit of the transmission line six is 200 megawatts, then the magnitude of congestion here will be the differences between the 250, which is the unconstrained power flow, to the power limit, 200, is the 50 megawatts. And if we look at the generation related to this transmission line, we have gas 2 and gas 3. In these cases, gas 2 is the only effective units we can curtail to relieve the constraint. Because this example, like I mentioned earlier, there's no losses and it's radial line, so the effectiveness factor is 1. 1 megawatts of the congestion equal to 1 megawatts of curtailment. In these cases, we have 50 megawatts of magnitude of congestion, it equal to 50 megawatts of curtailment. In reality, the topology will be way more complicated than this. And the effectiveness factor is going to be less than 1. In other words, 1 megawatt of congestion will require more than 1 megawatt of curtailment. Page 22, please. We perform congestion assessment at the different system conditions. The first one is what we called N-0 congestion. And it has two cases associated with it. The first one, we have assumed all the system elements are available and perform congestion assessment. This situation is rather utopia and is really happening in reality. The second case is what we call it, is related to contingency. If we consider the impact post-contingency, the curtailment is more than the most severe single contingency, then ISO needs to take pre-contingency curtailment. And this is also essentially N-0 congestion. The second condition we analyze is the N-1 congestion. In this case, we take one single element out for all hours in our study period. This is to assess category B congestion risk at different load and a generation combination. Now let's turn to page 23, please. Congestion assessment is a rather resource-intensive process. A lot of time, we have to model more than 200 generators, around 1,200 transmission lines. We perform 8760 hourly simulation. We talk about different scenarios, different sensitivities, different study years. We talk about billions of records, and we talk about big data. A significant time was spent to calibrate the model to ensure we have satisfactory information in terms of how the units would dispatch and the location of transmission line flows. In addition to that, we try to analyze what are reasonable scenarios so we can capture relevant uncertainties and variabilities and understand, have a full picture about a risk. And lastly, is about digesting the data. This is a sea of the data. A lot of time really we spent is to understand what is the problem and what are the root causes of those problems. How can we connect the dots? And how can we extract useful information out of this data to inform our planning decisions? In the past 2 years, the ISO has spent a lot of effort in terms of developing and refining the congestion assessment methodology and tool. And we have used the congestion assessment to support our recent system project application, Central East Transfer Out. We're going to continue to enhance and refine our process going forward. With that, I'm going to turn to Dennis to host the Q&A session.
Thanks, Lee. I know for those obviously on the line, this is it's never easy to try to communicate some of this study basis and methodology via video. But we wanted to at least go through the basics with you as to how we're going and using congestion assessments, the methodology, the modeling, and the complexity of what it takes to go down to 8760 hour modeling on a power system with a variety of scenarios so we can get a better understanding of the risk of congestion under those different scenarios to guide our decision-making as to when we think we need new infrastructure. So hopefully Lay's conversation and Amir's has given you an idea as to our approach in that space. And now we're open to any questions you may have in relation to that that information we just shared.
Thanks, Dennis. So if anyone has a question that they would like to ask verbally, feel free to raise your hand and I will come by and unmute you. Those on the phone, I believe it's *9. Or feel free to type in a written question as well.
And if there are no questions, we've done an incredibly good job of communicating what we're up to, which would be awesome. Now, Amir mentioned a few things there that we may have skimmed over, and I'll just provide a slight bit more context. As far as new technologies go, we're in 2021, we're looking at two areas for opportunity there. One is there's some new technology that's coming onto the grid that's being utilized in other jurisdictions in order to be able to control power flows on transmission lines, which will allow us to optimize the existing system before we have to build new infrastructure. And so we'll be looking at testing applications of that technology in 2021. We're in the process right now of identifying where we think the best applications are for that technology. And we will march through that process of applying that technology here in 2021 to get a good feel what its capabilities are in optimizing an existing network. The other is around dynamic line ratings. I know we've looked at that in the past. I'm going to ask the team to work through in 2021 a more structured plan around where we think we can utilize dynamic line ratings and get confidence in its capabilities, whether that's actual online measurement of transmission line temperatures and wind and so on, or if there's ways we can get some predictive capabilities to dynamically rate lines based on weather patterns and so on. So we're going to march that forward in 2021 as well to see if we can utilize that type of capability to optimize the existing network. And now I see there's some questions cranking in, so that's good.
There I'll is. Pass it
back to you, Jennifer.
Perfect. Thank you, Dennis. Colin here, if I can just unmute you, let me know if you can.
Hi there. Thanks very much, Dennis and team, for hosting this morning. Colin Roberts, Power. The 2017 long-term or transmission plan provided some preliminary analysis around different levels of DCG on the system and what it does to the capacity on the bulk transmission system. Will that form part of sort of additional analysis when you're looking at capability, regional capability of the infrastructure, and do you plan to enhance that that modeling going forward?
Amir, I'll pass that one to you, and then you can pass it to Lay from a congestion assessment perspective.
Thanks, Colin, for the question. That was the 2020 long-term plan. As you mentioned, the 2020 long-term plan showed if you have DCG or DER penetration in different part of the province, what would be the impacts on the capabilities. So when it comes to that, DCGs or DER, there are a couple of things that we would take into account. One, obviously we have our forecast, and depending on the forecast, whatever would be the forecasted DER or DCG, we would take it into account into our capability assessment and into our congestion assessment and so on and so forth. The other thing is going forward, so that DCG or DER assessment, we obviously did it based on deterministic assessment. One area of opportunity is definitely expand those assessment based on things such as congestion assessment and that granular capability-based assessment to see that how that plays. And the, finally, the last year layer is when it comes to the connection assessments. If you have a DCG or DR application, definitely there is a fine-tune and a specific assessment that is tailored to that specific project. So I'll stop here and see if you have any follow-up question on that.
Leigh, did you have anything to add to Amir's explanation?
Amir basically covered most of things. When we do the congestion assessment, in addition to take consideration of what forecast, what DCG forecast we have considered in a corporate forecast, quite often we also look at the potential development and examine what might be the impact as well.
Jennifer, back to you as to which question is next here.
Thanks. Thanks for that question, Colin. Here, I'm just going to. Okay, so we have several written questions now. I will just start up at the top. When lines are down for maintenance, does that count as N minus one contingency? How are contingencies studied and handled during maintenance? And that's from Jeff.
Amir, you can grab that one to start with.
Yeah, so obviously when we have a line out for maintenance, it means that we have one element out of service. So technically speaking, that is an N minus one condition. So when it comes, but one thing to take into account, when it comes to the planning of the system, there is a distinction to what when it comes to the operating the system. So obviously when a system controller is operating the system and one line is out of service for maintenance, they also are operating the system so that if a next contingency happens, the system is operated reliably. This is something that typically we call it N minus one condition. But to answer your question, yes, that is an N minus one condition. But I just want to emphasize that there is that distinction between operation and planning. When we plan the system, we plan it based on the TPLS standards. We have TPL 001, 002, 003, and 004. For example, TPL 001 is N minus zero condition, and TPL 001 is N minus one condition, or category B condition, which would cover a condition like what you explained.
From a congestion assessment perspective, we currently are not doing N minus one as far as the congestion assessments we're looking at. Primarily N minus zero congestion to see what our forecast of future congestion is for those states. And then we're looking at N minus one situations to see what the congestion would be under those states. And that's a sufficient enough of complexity for now, I think, versus going to the N minus one type conditions in our congestion assessments, because it wouldn't factor a lot into our decision-making from a new infrastructure perspective in that respect.
Perfect. Thank you, guys. Next question is from Dwayne Asberg. How is interim information from the Aurora model communicated to Albertans, such as the assumptions and the intermediate results?
So Dwayne, I'll take a shot at that first, and then I'll pass it probably to Leigh. When you talk about interim information, I want to be clear. The type of analysis we're doing here from a congestion assessment is tied to either work for a particular system project that we're looking at, and we want to do some congestion assessment analysis to get a feel for the risk of congestion as it relates to that system project, or we're doing it in relation to a specific connection project and trying to assess the risk of congestion associated with that particular project of connection. And so we're not doing it as an interim from a long-term planning perspective or anything like that. This is pretty targeted on particular system projects or particular connection projects. If we do it for a system project like we have in our CETO project, that information and assumption would be obviously partly of what's included in our application for that type of project. So we won't be pushing out to stakeholders all the different steps and assumptions we make as we go. It'll be very project specific as we get into that process. So hopefully that answers your question. Amir, Leigh, did you have anything to tag on to that?
No, basically that's it. And I want to emphasize we're still new in this process, so there's only a few congestion assessment we did, and they are very project specific.
Thanks. Don Morgan, I'll grab this now for, just let me know if there's any audio ones that want to jump in, Jennifer.
Yeah, I don't see any raised hands at the moment. Do you want to scroll down the updated one? I think that Don shared is a little bit further down.
Oh, okay. Can you review how and when projects under development impact studies? How do we ensure that projects that may never be built do not negatively impact studies on development projects less advanced in the interconnection process? What triggers a development project to be included or removed from the studies?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll pass that to Amir to start with, and then to Lay from a congestion assessment perspective.
Yeah, so sorry, I'm just reading the question to make sure I understand it.
This is around how we include, how we decide what gets included in our studies, both from a connection and a system and a...
So obviously, when we do our studies, now I assume that this is specifically related to the congestion studies, but generally speaking, when we talk about future developments, we would include the future developments that have reached some certain level of acceptance. For example, we wouldn't include a project that doesn't have approval. We would typically include the projects that have approval if you are talking about system projects, and by that I mean need approval. If you are talking about connection projects, we would include projects that have some certain sufficient certainty. So for example, if you are talking about the load projects, they have PNL approval. If you are talking about the generation projects, they have had those financial commitments and so on and so forth. So that is the information that we would include to make sure there are some certainty around those. And at the end of the day, the planning is an ongoing process. So if you are talking about the planning studies, the planning studies are ongoing process, and through that reoccurring assessment, we would capture the updates going forward if there is an update. But to minimize those updates, as I mentioned, we focus on those certainty criteria and those approval criteria to make sure the future updates is kept to the minimum level. So I think I will stop here to see if Dennis, you would like to add anything to that.
Yeah, just I guess we'll bucket this into two pieces again, because things are handled a little differently from a system project perspective versus a connection project perspective. So when we're doing our analysis from a system project perspective, we're looking out multiple years. It's pretty long range. And so we're looking at scenarios and trying to forecast incremental generation needed to meet incremental load. We'll take a shot at where we think that generation might be located regionally, what type of generation it would be. And that is then used in those system studies and the scenarios that Lay talked about from a congestion assessment perspective. Now, we recognize we're making forecasts and assumptions as to exactly which, where and what size and what type of generation is included in those studies. And there's a range that we will use to try to have confidence around those bookends, as I would describe it. Now, as we go forward in our congestion assessments and the triggering of milestones that are tied to those congestion results, as time progresses and more generation becomes certain, which is our certainty criteria, we will then reaffirm our congestion assessments based on that new known information. So new generation that has reached certainty, where it's located, what type, we will then incorporate that updated information into our congestion assessment and reaffirm if our results are still consistent with what we had forecasted initially. Now, that's on a system project basis, because we're looking at a larger region with a whole bunch of different generation potentially unfolding in that region at different times and different types. And so from a connection project perspective, we're now in a different time horizon. We're usually within the next couple of years. We're trying to assess that particular connection project. We'll have certain knowns in the region. We're modeling those knowns in the region and forecasting out in time the impact of that new connection project in that particular local region. And so that's the type of modeling we would do in the congestion assessments if we applied that for connection projects. As far as specifically when a particular project is incorporated in a connection study, at what stage and of what certainty, Maz, I know you're here on the line. Maybe you can just offer to answer that specific question from a connection process perspective. You'll have to unmute. Thanks.
Yes, sure. So for the connection projects, we consider other projects. When we do a study on a specific project, we consider other projects in the same study area if they have reached some certainty level. And that certainty level is basically, as Amir said, it depends on how far they are in the connection process. For example, for load, currently, we consider the projects that they have received permit and license. And for generation, we looked at the projects that they have paid their generating unit contribution, which is the go-out payment. So we consider those in the studies. But I have to mention, there are situations that we run sensitivity analysis when there is another generation very close by, and we want to make sure that if that generation also moves in the connection process, we have considered their impact. So we do have sometimes sensitivity analysis with respect to the project very close by to the project that we are studying.
Okay, thanks, Max.
Yeah. Yep.
No worries. Thanks, Max. Okay, we're gonna quickly try to catch. Jennifer, you'll have to let me know when our time is up for Q&A on this one.
Yeah, we've got about 5 minutes.
Okay, Akira, have you done any backcasting with respect to the use of congestion assessment tool to determine how aligned the predictive results are with actuals? I'm gonna pass that to Lay. I think the answer to that is no, yeah. We're not looking at backcasting so much, but I'll pass it to Lay. She's probably fine-tuned the model.
Well, backcasting is just one of the tools we use to calibrate our model. And as I mentioned earlier, the reason why congestion assessment is a such resource-intensive process is that we did spend a lot of time to analyze the model, reviewed assumptions and results, ensure we are happy with what we have. And backcast is just one of the mechanisms we used. I hope
that maybe you can just share a little bit more, Lay, as to what kind of backcasting we're talking about, because obviously we're doing congestion assessment studies out to the future based on forecasts of hourly merit order and what type of generation might be there in the region at the time, and what transmission we might need. So the congestion assessments are very much a future forecasting. And Akira, we're trying to look at scenarios so we have ranges of potential outcomes. We're not trying to predict exactly in the future what will actually unfold, because that's impossible to do. So we will look at ranges of scenarios to give us confidence of kind of what the outcomes could be and make our decision based on those ranges as we look at the probabilities of that outcome.
Sure. So backcast is, I want to share with you that the backcast is one of the main tools we use in calibrate our model. And we have three ways to do the backcast. One is we actually use the actual historical load by buses and generation to ensure the model is performed the task we intend to have. And second task we do is focus on the market, the generation output. Given the assumption we have there is based on the empirical data, we want to see this forecasted generation output in a historic year matches our expectation. And the next level we did is that when we plug in the transmission system, we like to see if the forecast flow also matches our expectation, has the similar seasonality, similar characteristic of the historical flow. And that are the three major steps we used to calibrate our model. And as Dennis mentioned, and then we started to adding different uncertainties, different sensitivities, and to see how those things would change our behavior in the future.
Okay, Jennifer, is it kind of time up for now, and we'll answer some more questions towards the end? Is that the best way to move?
Yeah, I think so. We had scheduled a quick break for about 10 minutes now, if everyone wants to come back around 10:10.
Okay, everybody take a break, grab a coffee, and we'll restart in about 10 minutes, which is about 10:10. Thanks. Okay, welcome back, everybody. We had a quick break. Now we're gonna go through a little bit of a conversation around how we're gonna apply congestion assessments in our system and connection project decision making from an infrastructure perspective, and our views on Section 15.2 exemption applications. And Amir is going to lead us through that discussion. So over to you, Amir.
Okay, thank you. So let's start with the application of congestion assessment. So first we will talk about the applications used in system planning. And by system planning, we are talking about longer term studies that are system-wide studies, such as long-term planning studies and system needs that are basically system projects filing for a NED to the AUC. So we have a list of applications here, so let's go through them. One is prioritized transmission developments that are identified in the long-term transmission plan. And when you look at any long-term transmission plan, for example, the last long-term transmission plan, there are many developments that are identified on that transmission development plan. The question is, which of those developments have higher priority and should be translated to a system project state going through the regulatory process? And congestion assessment is a tool that we are using to educate ourselves about understanding what are the problems, how severe are the problems, how frequent they are, and so on and so forth, and use that information to help us better prioritize the projects or the developments. Another thing is evaluating the need of transmission development. So again, one of the key things that we do in terms of system developments is identifying the need. And when it comes to identifying the needs in conjunction with deterministic study, we use congestion studies to better understand the need and the drivers and things like that. One other application is informing study condition and scenarios. And what that is at the end of the day, any planning study is a system planning study, is looking at the future. So we are talking about some study condition. We want to ensure that a study condition is a reasonable study condition. So when we apply congestion assessment, running hourly simulation for every hour of the year in future, we can see what are the study conditions that happen and are reasonable to assume in our, for example, deterministic study condition. And hence, congestion assessment is a tool to inform us about validating and making sure we have reasonable study condition. The fourth application that we have is selecting the preferred transmission development. As you folks know, when we have a system planning issue, and we have a need, we would identify different alternatives and we would check that those alternatives based on different criteria. One of the key criteria is the technical performance. And in conjunction with the deterministic studies, congestion studies are also used when appropriate to help us inform what is the performance of different alternatives compared to each other and which one is a more prudent and more effective alternative to go ahead. Obviously, as I mentioned, there are different factors that we take into account. For example, we have listed here economic efficiency assessment, but it doesn't stop there. Congestion assessment is one input amongst other for that decision-making process. And lastly, one of the application is designing appropriate milestone, as we discussed, to control the timing of transmission development. And in the next slide 27, we have a typical example of how we use a congestion assessment to design a milestone. Obviously, we are talking about a congestion-based milestone, meaning that this is something stemming from generation development. What we have here is we have a baseline. Baseline could be the generation level, the existing generation level as of a certain time span. And then we have increased generation level that are shown here. The green one shows the generation level that have gained that certainty criteria. What we would do is if we use congestion assessment, we could identify what level of generation, additional generation, would lead us to a congestion. In this case, for example, we are saying that what is the generation that level that would put us in more than 0.5% of congestion for system normal condition. And that, which is shown with the dashed line, would be a key information in designing our milestone. We may apply a buffer. So in this case, we have a buffer from the dashed line to the solid red line. And that buffer is to take into account the fact that transmission development at the end of the day, it's a lengthy process. It would take longer time compared to a generation development. So we may apply a buffer to take into account that time difference. And that's how we would design that milestone. Again, it is used to see what is the level of generation that put us on that specified congestion level, and then we would apply the appropriate other factors and consideration in designing that. In the next slide, we talk about the application in connection planning, and by connection planning, we are primarily talking about those plannings that are associated for need assessment to respond to a SAS or system access service request. So we have a list of application here. Obviously, it is those application is when appropriate. They are primarily focused for the supply type connection, SASRs, and when we are seeing congestion as a potential concerns. Some of these applications are pretty similar to what we discussed on the system domain. For example, the second application is about informing and validating and ensuring that we have reasonable study conditions, similar to what we explained in the system slide. Again, the third one is similar to what we discussed when we are talking about alternative analysis for a connection application. There are different alternatives. They need to be assessed considering different factors. Congestion assessment could be one factor amongst other to ensure the alternative that we put together is effective and addresses congestion, and so on and so forth. And lastly, when appropriate, we are thinking of an exception application under Section 15.2 of Transmission Regulation or TREG. Congestion assessment is, again, a very useful tool to help us form the information that we need for that application. And we will talk about that in more detail in the last part of this presentation. Before we go there, there are a couple of other things that we would like to highlight. One is the distinction between different congestion patterns in the system. So congestion in the system could impact an individual stakeholder or market participant, or it could impact multiple stakeholder and market participant, meaning it's impacting a wide region and or a wide area. As an example, if you look at the Central East Transfer Out Transmission Development, that is a development that is proposed to address congestion across the whole Southeast and Central East or Eastern portion of the province. So it's a regional wide area impacting multiple customers. Whoever is trying to connect in that area, there is definitely an impact. So this is a system-wide impacting multiple customers. Generally speaking, congestion that is impacting multiple customers in a wide region has a higher priority compared to a congestion that is impacting an individual customers for obvious reason, because the impacts are higher, it impacts multiple customers, and so on and so forth. So generally speaking, we would prioritize that as a higher priority compared to a local impacting single customers. Having said that, there are other factors that we would take into account in that prioritization exercise. For example, what are the future market interests? What is the future forecast? What is the forecasted or projected level of congestion? What is the magnitude? What is the frequency of that? And things like that. So the key here is a system-wide congestion generally has a higher priority, but we also have other factors to take into account when we do that assessment. And lastly, we want to talk about some of the options for connecting a project with forecasted congestion. So we have a connection project. That connection project, we are foreseeing or forecasting congestion if that project, that connection project goes ahead. What are the options? We are talking about four different options here. One option here is we have an existing system development or existing plan development in that area that would address the congestion should the connection project go ahead. So one option is to control the timing of that connection project to be in service in alignment with that system development or that transmission development. That is one option. Now we talk about existing plans development, but the ISO may deem it appropriate to also put a new plan in place. Regardless, the key thing here is that one option is to adjust the in-service date of that connection project with that development, whether it's an existing plan development or it's a new plan development. The second option is to accept that congestion level going ahead with the 15-2 exception application, considering the timing of that future development. The last two options are around going with the uncongested congestion. The third one is going with the uncongested congestion that would potentially lead to a higher cost to connect, for example, connecting to a stronger hub where with that connection, we don't project the congestion to happen. And lastly, the one option is to connect and operate with the reduced contract capacity or reduced STC, meaning that the contract capacity is reduced so that the congestion doesn't occur. So these are, again, the four options to take into account and we would consider when we are talking about connecting projects with forecasted congestion. Now, we will talk about the Section 15-2 exception application and we will cover a couple of things here. One is, what is a Section 15-2 exception application? What that is and why, where it come in place. Then we will talk about Section 15-2 application in system and connection. We'll talk about what does it entail and we will talk about typically what type of information we would include in such an application. So to explain what that is, first we are talking about some of the key provisions and key concepts of transmission regulation or tiering. In transmission regulation, we have Section 15-1. Section 15-1 has two key subsections, 15-1E and 15-1F. What they say generally is they are saying that the system needs to be planned and making arrangement for implementing those plans so that we meet a certain congestion requirement. And those congestion requirements are generally referred to as 195% requirement. The 100% requirement means under system normal condition, meaning that all transmission facilities are in service, we shouldn't have any congestion. And the 95% is talking about under abnormal system condition, meaning that not all of the transmission facilities are in service, N-1, N-2, N-1, -1, so on and so forth. We shouldn't have more than 5% of the congestion in the system. That is what we refer as 195% requirement. Any congestion in excess of what is specified here, we call it excess congestion. So let us recap. We have Section 15-1. Section 15-1 has Section 15-1E, which says we need to plan the system for 195% requirement. Section 15-1F says we need to make arrangement for that. That 195% requirement are referring to system normal, 100% of the time, no congestion, system abnormal, congestion up to 5% of the time, and anything beyond that would be categorized as excess congestion. And that is what basically is laid out under section 15.1 E and F. Now, section 15.1.2 says that the ISO may apply for an exception for these two requirements that were laid out on section 15.1 E and section 15.1 F, meaning that that exception, if it's referring to 15.1 E, could be a planning exception, and if it's referring to 15.1 F, could be an exception for arrangement or making arrangement exception. So what does it mean? When we talk about planning, we consider planning meaning generally referring to conceptual plans, such as the plan that we put together in long-term transmission plan. This is what we categorize as planning. Making arrangement means that translating those plans into system projects and pushing them through the regulatory process. So again, 15.1.2 exception could be applied to planning, could be applied to making arrangement. Planning, we are talking about conceptual plans laid out in the long-term plan. Generally, making arrangement is translating those into system projects and regulatory process. One thing to consider is, obviously, we are talking about planning the system, thinking about the future condition. We are talking about the conditions that are reasonably anticipated. And that's why we are talking about reasonably anticipated congestion. The other thing that I would like to explain is regarding the planning exception. We don't foresee relying on the planning exception. The reason being is because we continue to plan the system in accordance with that 195% requirement, meaning that if we don't have a plan, for example, somewhere in the system, it is because we foresee the system to, or based on our planning assessment, we project the system to be capable to meet that requirement. Considering that we plan the system to meet that 195% requirement, again, we don't foresee relying on the planning exception. So we are primarily focusing on exception for making arrangement part, or section 15.1F part. So now we're going to talk about those exceptions as it relates to system projects, and after that, as it relates to connection projects. So first, let's talk about the system projects. If you are talking about the system developments in an area, as we discussed, we would utilize construction milestone as much as possible to control the timing. So ideally, the timing of the implementation would be in a way that we have the project in place in the right time to not have congestion beyond what is permitted. However, due to different situation, we may get to a condition that we have some congestion. For example, we may have projects delay, that system developments have some delays, and as a result, now we would need to live with some level of congestion, or there are some forecast uncertainties, because as I mentioned, we are looking down the road, we are looking to the future, and at the end of the day, that assessment is based on some assumption. So if there is anything unfolding differently, we could see some congestion. That's one area where 15.2 exception application could come in place. What about the connection projects? So we have a connection project. If that connection projects move forward, we would foresee to have congestion. But for different reason, the ISO may not move ahead with transmission development until the connection project has gained some certainty. So because we are talking about expending money and significant or transmission development in the system, that would cost money. To be prudent, we may wait for the project to gain sufficient certainty. And that would mean that the project will go ahead and we would potentially have some congestion before that system development is in place. This is another area where 15.2 exception application could come in place. Again, we would look at a situation where we are reasonably certain that the connection project is proceeding, and with that connection projects proceeding, the transmission development is not in place before the connection project, and we would have some congestion. This is again another area that 15.2 exception could come in place. in the connection projects domain. And lastly, we talked about what does it entail and what information it included. So this slide 37, explains some of those information. One thing to take into account is at the end of the day, this is a case by case, depending on the application and the detail of that. But generally, some of this key information that are included are listed here. What is the study assumption? What is load and generation forecast? What type of topology we have studied? These are the study assumptions that we would include. We would also include information about the study results, meaning that where is the location of congestion? Where we are foreseeing to see that? What are the constraints which would lead to congestion and where they are? At what time we are foreseeing to see that? When is it 2023, 2024, so on and so forth. And the last set of results are generally frequency, magnitude, and duration of the congestion. And my colleague Lei Shung earlier on in the presentation explained what are these terms. And we would also include the plans that we have to resolve that anticipated congestion, meaning that what is the development that we have? When are we aiming to have that development? What would be the cost of that development? What are the other options that we consider, and so on and so forth. So that concludes this section and this presentation. We are moving to the second part of the question, so I hand it to Dennis.
Thanks, Amir. So hopefully that part of the conversation provides some a little bit of clarity as to how we are looking at congestion assessments, looking at the potential to require exemption applications based on forecast uncertainty or timing of development. One of the message should be, we will continue to be planning the system based on the regulations, which guides us to 100% in merit generation under N-0 conditions and the 95% under N-1 conditions. Now, what we're trying to articulate here is we're going to be utilizing probabilities in our congestion assessments to understand the range of timing for development and when we think we need to move forward with in order to address potential forecast congestion. So we're going to be taking the incremental risk in that decision-making based on the probabilities of the analysis and the assumptions that we put into our studies, both the deterministic and on the probabilistic side. And directionally, that's the path we're heading down, and you'll see that in our go-forward applications, whether they're system applications or particular connection projects that we see having potential congestion-related issues in that very localized region due to that connection. So I'm going to go back now to the existing questions that we have, and I encourage if that last part of the conversation triggered more questions, by all means, please fire them in. We'll take as much time as we need to answer these questions. I'm going to start with Ed's DePalizu's question here. The ISO completed an assessment in the South on how much renewable generation can be connected. Is the ISO going to update this analysis? The ISO seems to have accepted higher generation levels for renewable than this assessment. Is this from using your probabilistic assessment? I'm going to first pass that to you, Amir, and then you can see if Lace got anything additional to add to that one.
Yeah, thanks, Ed. Yes, as you mentioned, we publish a capability assessment. I think you are referring to the one that we published in the first half of 2019. The capability-based assessment that we published then and the capability assessment that we published in the 2020 LTP was primarily based on deterministic studies. So they didn't include the probabilistic study, the congestion studies, directly, obviously, as I explained, for things such as a study condition and so on and so forth, it was used. But after that, it was based on deterministic studies. As we talk about it in the first part of the presentation, in 2021, definitely we are looking to progress and update those. And we are planning on employing the congestion assessment study, providing more granularity, having information on the substation level. So I hope that provides an answer to you. And Lei, if you have anything to add, please go ahead.
No, thank you.
Yeah, I'm just going to tag on to that. As I want to be clear, as we're working through the potential to drop down from the regional capability assessment maps to more of a granular substation level assessment mapping. We don't have that figured out yet. So 2021 is about thinking through the methodology and the approaches to see if we can get confidently down to that substation level to provide that type of information in a capability-based map, both by GIS, but also by actually doing the analysis through that methodology. So I'm optimistic the team can figure out how to get there, but I want to make sure those that are listening today don't have the expectation that come February 2021, you're going to see substation level capability maps on our website. We're working through the process. I'm looking to be there by the end of 2021, if we can get there, and we'll update you as we move through that work and see if we can deliver on that that goal or not. Just so I wanted to be clear on that. Novell has a question here. Is Aurora used in real time or just long term tool? How does it take into account planned and unplanned generator outages and the impact that they have on congestion? So no, we're not using Aurora as a real-time tool. It is a planning tool, and it is to help us, particularly when we're looking at system projects and connection projects. From a real-time basis, our operators and our control center has contingency analysis capabilities in the real-time or near real-time, and so they will use that tool day ahead, week ahead, hour ahead to go through and run contingencies on the system to see if it has any implications on our network, be it reliability implications or congestion implications. Now, we also, for those that aren't aware, we have a real-time congestion management process here in Alberta that should we see we're in that congestion state, we have to go through a particular process to relieve that congestion through allocation on existing generators that are actually producing in the region. At that time. And again, it's an effectiveness-based approach. So that's how we deal with real-time related congestion here in the province. And Aurora and all the congestion assessments is used for a planning basis. Raj written on then. Raj, hydrogen storage is increasingly becoming economical. Would the ISO consider hydrogen storage opportunities in its assessments? I think from a storage perspective, whether it's hydrogen or anything else, we in the congestion assessment space or even the planning space, we will look at the technologies that we feel are viable as it relates to connections. If there's a hydrogen storage project in our connection process, we will use it in that connection study. In the planning, system planning space, we're indifferent to the technology. We will look at storage as a potential tool to address reliability constraints that we see in our planning space. But as to whether it's hydrogen or pumped hydro or battery or whatever, I think we're indifferent to that in our studies. So some people might think hydrogen storage is going to be economical in 2 years. Some might think it's going to be economical in 10. We're not going to worry about that. We'll look at storage just as a tool, whichever technology happens to come through the phase first. How have Aurora, this is a Novell, how have Aurora long-term constraint forecast compared to real-time situations? 90% correct prediction, 50%. Now, I'm not actually clear what the question is, but if you're asking us how effective is our congestion assessment at predicting the level of congestion as it relates to actual congestion under, I'll call it N-0 and N-1 conditions, I think Lay went through explaining how we have calibrated the tool. Now, obviously, our forecast of generation and load and how good that is to real will determine how close our predictions are between forecasted and real. And again, this is a tool to guide us in our planning decisions, not to manage real-time congestion. So hopefully that answers that question. And Leigh or Amir, did you have anything to tag on to that?
I have one comment. We have explained we perform congestion assessment at two types of system condition, N-0 and N-1. In real time, it's way more complicated than those two system conditions, but they're not comparable.
Yeah, good point, because obviously in real time, you can have a multitude of different outages for planned or unplanned going on, and so trying to use this tool to predict real-time situations would be a mug's game. We're kind of just using it for planning, and then we've got our real-time contingency process in the control center to manage in the near term. Dragan Brunkovich, can you provide more details on congestion triggers and how these triggers will be used to initiate the construction of transmission facilities? I think Amir went through that here in the next part of the conversation. And you will have seen a typical approach that we're using where we're essentially incrementally adding generation as we're doing the studies. And we're trying to forecast the type and general location of that generation. And we're using the output patterns of that generation in that 8760 model, so that we can get a reasonably good prediction of when we're going to start to bump up to N-0 congestion based on those assumptions. And it's when we start seeing N-0 congestion, and we took a 0.5% N-0 congestion level as just a level to guide us, that once we start getting above that, we need to make some decisions on new infrastructure, given the regulation of N-0 100% of the time in Merritt. So we're using that approach. And once the generation moves up to that sufficient certainty level, that's when we will trigger construction. In front of that, we are moving system projects through the regulatory process with those triggers. We're requesting the commission to allow us to trigger based on those types of milestones so we can get to the approval stage and sit there and wait until the triggers are triggered, to then move the construction phase forward to try to both delay the timing of the largest cost, which is the construction, and time that infrastructure to be in place when we believe that actual supply is going to be connected and running on the grid. So hopefully that helps explain the approach we're using there on congestion and milestone triggers and construction. Novell, equipment maintenance, like generation, transmission, can have a significant impact on system constraints. This potentially can save significant dollars in terms of capital expenditures and on constraint. Mitigation, does the ISO manage planned outages? So I think I went through that question. At real time, we manage in real time, whether it's planned or unplanned outages. And we're doing that on a near real-time basis in the control center and in front of that. This is about planning. And so we use N-1 and N-0 in our assessments for congestion in this process. So I think we've already answered that one. But if you still have a follow-up question on Novell, you can just fire it in. Sandra, is the congestion assessment playing a role in the connection process? At which stage in the connection process? So I think Amir covered that and Lay. So yes, we will use congestion assessments for connection projects, but again, we will be specific about, because it does take a fair bit of work, as Lay mentioned, to set up the models and get all the scenarios and do the actual congestion assessment. We'll be selective as to those connection projects that we think it's valuable to apply congestion assessments on. So those would be supply related, and our deterministic studies will help guide us to go, yeah, we think if this connection project went in, we're going to potentially have congestion in the area. So now it's worthwhile doing congestion assessments to get a view of the probabilities of that congestion and when it would occur. So that's the approach we're taking on connection projects. Amir, Lay, did you have anything additional to add to that one?
No, I think you covered it well. I have nothing to add.
Okay. Is MC or STS, this is from Sandra Jing as well. Oh, sorry, I skipped over Colette. I'll come back to you, Colette. Sandrigine, is MC or STS rate being used for the congestion assessment for an industrial complex with generator units? Okay, that's detailed below what I can remember. So over to you, Leigh.
Sure, they're actually both used depending on the type of project.
Maybe you can provide some clarity as to which we use for which type of project.
Sure, the STS is mainly used in the connection project because we do want to understand if the units is able to stick to the STS at what hours, what might be the potential risk. And we use the MC, which is here, I think we met the maximum capability. Use that as a guidance, how big the maximum amount we're gonna offer into the system.
Okay, thanks. And obviously, as Leigh mentioned, in the congestion assessment, we're actually going through the prediction of the merit order and who's going to be dispatched when, based on merit order and load. So that is what drives the full predictability of the congestion assessment process. Back to Colette's question. If there is a system benefit by having a more expensive connection, why wouldn't we absorb incremental connection costs of the project and tariff it if it resulted in a lower overall cost to consumers to avoidance of new transmission? Is there a better locational signal through tariff mechanism that results in less TX development and sent to develop generation on existing industrial sites? Okay, that's a long question, Colette. If I don't answer it, feel free to ask some more details, or you can reach out to me and we can have a conversation on it specifically. I think as Amir went through, for a particular connection project, if that particular project wants to proceed forward and we're seeing congestion, potentially if we connect that project, there's a choice to be made by that market participant as to whether they want to continue in the interim with congestion, if they're able to connect before we can get system development in place, we determine if that's what is needed from an enablement perspective. So, or they have a choice. They can spend the incremental connection costs and go to a stronger location and move forward with that approach. I don't think we would consider that interconnection because it wouldn't likely be a networked or system connection. It'd be a radial connection to a stronger hub. I don't think we would consider that as a system type cost in that connection. So I think that cost would be likely borne by that market participant in the choice that they're making to move forward with their project in that situation. Now, again, I'd say that's typical. There's always case by case type conversations that we would need to have on specific situations. As far as better locational signals and incenting generation to develop at existing sites. As I said at the beginning, I'm not going to get into conversations here on this one around potential changes in framework or tariff or regulations. I think those are best conversations to be had in those processes and not necessarily within this conversation. We're working here based on the current construct that we've got in front of us currently. Dan Levson's question. Can you give us an update on where the ISO is at on conducting cost-benefit analysis on new transmission projects, including the use of probabilistic analysis that assesses the value of lost load and reliability on various alternatives to supply the need, including the do-nothing alternative? Okay, Dan, in conjunction of answering your question, I guess it's a distinction between system projects and another type of connection-driven projects. I guess our first update there is the congestion assessment is bringing that probability analysis in for supply-type projects. Cost-benefit and the value of lost load, we'll be working through thinking through that approach. I think it's a relevant consideration. I think value of lost load, though, is also up for all kinds of debates as to what to apply to the value. And I think there's a lot of other factors than just the value of lost load in any decision-making on cost-benefit. And so I think, Dan, that's probably a much longer conversation to have as we look forward in that place and space. But we will be looking at it here in 2021, particularly as it relates to DFO type driven transmission, as well as any system type project development that we're looking at. Recognizing we have a market structure here in Alberta that is about enabling open access with 100% congestion free for in merit order. And so it's in that construct that we are making our decisions for new infrastructure going forward. Amir or Leigh, did you want to tag anything onto that one?
Yeah, the only thing that I would add is at the end of the day, we would absolutely, as you mentioned, there is a distinction between connection project and system project. And when it comes to the system domain, obviously we are mandated to plan the system based on TPLS standards and the transmission regulation. And that is also something that for example, if it comes to load, we would have to be compliant to the TPLS standards and the associated standard that we have there. So that is also something to take into account.
Thanks, Amir.
Yeah.
Richard Penn has a question here. ISO has a trigger of 0.5% for congestion. If you had a project with greater than 0.5% congestion, but the cost of the congestion was evaluated at 1 million and the cost of the project was 150 million, would you go ahead with the project? Okay, so in answering that question, I want to be clear on the 0.5% that we have in that example. I will reiterate, we are not planning the system to have 0.5% congestion. We are planning the system based on the current regulations to have 100% congestion free for in merit generation. That is the regulations that are in place here today. We are using that 0.5% congestion in our congestion assessments to put what I would call a basic reasonable accuracy of, there's a bunch of assumptions in the studies. And so we didn't want to just set a milestone trigger purely at 0%. So we picked about 0.5% congestion just to deal with the inaccuracies of all the modeling assumptions and so on. And so when we start seeing in those congestion assessments, we start to bump up above 0.5%. That's a good indicator for us that there's a probability that we're going to start to have congestion under N minus zero. And therefore, we've used that as a starting point to help set the trigger as to how much generation we would wait to see to reach sufficient certainty before we pulled the trigger on the milestone for construction. So we want to be clear, we're not planning to have 0.5% congestion on the system. That's not the intent of what we're doing. As far as evaluating the cost of congestion, again, I'm going to reiterate, we're in a market structure that is open access, and the regulations make it clear that 100% of in-merit generation, you should be planning and making arrangements on the system to enable in-merit generation to have access to our market. And so the cost of congestion is an interesting frame and concept, but that is not the approach we're using currently here in Alberta to plan and drive infrastructure and transmission. So we wouldn't be doing that type of an evaluation on a cost-benefit perspective. We're planning based on the regulations of having 100% in-merit generation access to the grid. And that's the construct we have in place here in Alberta today. If we want to talk about different constructs, that's a different avenue and a different conversation to have. Which I'm sure, as you know, Richard, the government is likely moving forward with different conversations on the transmission reg and policy. And so we'll see where those conversations go in that context. And that's probably the avenue to have those conversations if you want to pursue them there. Ed DePalazzi, will the ISO be using its probabilistic congestion analysis to assess using non-wire solutions such as storage? Well, that's a good question. My quick reaction or response to that is it's probably early. We're just getting used to utilizing the probabilistic congestion assessment tool for load forecasting, generation forecasting, and numeric dispatch. As I said, we will be looking at storage as a potential tool in our planning process. And so in the planning phase, if we see a need for potential infrastructure to address a constraint or a reliability issue that we have, we'll look at storage as a potential tool versus wires as a potential tool. And if we assess that storage is a more economic option to defer the infrastructure than to go with wires, then we'll bring that forward as the solution in our NID process versus wires. We're not right now going to be looking at bringing in the probabilistic part of energy storage into this analysis. We're going to work on what we currently got and refine that a little bit, get confidence in it before we go into predicting storage. Akira, the ISO has proposed amendments to its tariff such that Guac is based on MC. If a project takes a lower STS as part of a Section 15.2 compromise, would the ISO also vary the Guac? That's a good question. I don't know if any of us have an answer to that. I know Rob or Maz, it's probably either a Maz or a Rob Davidson conversation. So Rob, I know you're on the line. Do you want to take a shot at that or just let us know if we need to take that one away to answer it later?
Yeah, this is Rob Davidson here. We had questions similar to this, if you will, at our connection process tariff stakeholder session. And we need to loop back with our tariff team with respect to that, the differences between the MC and the STS and the Guac.
Name it. Okay, so Akira, we'll include this question into that connection stakeholder process there and make sure that we answer it through that process as the team works through some of those other questions that we got on the connection tariff and the changes to the tariff that we had a week or so ago. Gordon Dobson, Mac, could you please advise how the recording of this workshop could be accessed in the future? Jennifer, over to you.
Yeah, so we will have the audio recording posted within 3 business days, and it'll be on the initiative webpage of ISO.ca. I can send you a note if you want once it's up, but it should be up within 3 days.
Okay, so hopefully that helps, Gordon. And if you have trouble finding it, just send an email to, was it stakeholder relations, Jennifer, is that the email?
At ISO.ca. Yeah. Thanks.
At ISO.ca, and then one of our savvy communications folks will get back to you with the answer. Ben Huey, is congestion analysis only based on market merit quantities? Are there considerations or sensitivities for the maximum capabilities of generating units? I'm gonna pass that to Lei to respond to that first. So that you get the correct answer and not a Dennis made up version. So over to you, Lei.
As I mentioned earlier, we do use the maximum capability to guide us what would be the maximum offer from each of the generator. I hope that answered the question.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you can go ahead.
Yeah, maybe I can add a little bit on that. So we would definitely use that, but in places where Ben, we think that there are sensitivities is required. Like for example, we are talking about generation unit that their behavior in the future could vary depending on different scenarios. We might have sensitivities and study different bookend condition. So for example, there is a generator, that generator could have a peaking behavior or could have a baseload behavior. It's really difficult to tell at this point. We may consider both peaking and peak load behavior, peaking and baseload behavior in our sensitivities to cover that range and get a good understanding of that two bookends and where we might fit in those two bookends.
Yeah. The other thing to add on is the maximum capability is only available for existing units.
Um, and just distinguish that comment as it relates to future units that have a maximum capability. Said we only use maximum capability for existing units, but obviously units that were
the future units, like Amir just mentioned, we then use the sensitivities and incremental sizes to test how those uncertainties would impact the results.
Right, and as you indicated, we would have those units, we'd know what their maximum capabilities are, and we would use the merit order to go up to that maximum capability in our analysis, depending on which scenarios we're looking at, whether it's peaking or more base load or whatever the case is. But we would obviously model, I assume, in our Aurora, the maximum capability and move up to it if it was that case in the merit order.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have assumptions and sensitivity in terms of the capability, and we also have assumptions about the behaviors.
Okay, thank you.
We have a couple raised hands if we are okay to hop over there. Ben, if you can go ahead.
Yeah, you'll have me.
Hello?
Yep, we can hear you now, Ben. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Hey, Dennis. Thanks for answering questions, and Emily and Amir. I had a question, a clarification question on slide 36. It's around the section 15.2 exceptions. I'm wondering how an existing market participant, as well as connecting projects, can kind of expect how much exemption would be granted by the ASO. How much congestion is too much congestion?
How much congestion is too much congestion as it relates to an exception application?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, well, I'll take a shot at that, and then, well, actually, Amir, you start, and then I'll add color commentate.
Maybe, Ben, I will go back to what I explained in slide 32. So under system normal condition, section 15.1 says that considering the characteristics of system and all that, we shouldn't have any congestion. So under system normal, no congestion. Under system abnormal condition, up to 5% of congestion. Anything beyond that is an excess congestion that would basically lead to a section 15.2 exception when appropriate. So the black and white answer to your question is anything beyond what is specified here.
Right. So then I guess I should rephrase my question to be, how much excess congestion granted by section 15.2 would be too much excess congestion?
Okay, maybe I'll try it this way, because we might not be clear in what we're trying to communicate. Let's take a particular connection project that is at the early stage of its process and hasn't reached for us the point of sufficient certainty, i.e. we're confident it's now moving forward and it's going to take some time to get it built, the plant to get built, connected in service. So what we're talking about from a connection perspective is we are obviously studying that connection and we're making assumptions and as to when that connection would be in service. And in our congestion assessment, if we see, you know, that we're predicting with that project in service that we're going to have N minus zero congestion in the region, then we would be working towards with that participant the solution to not having that congestion. And that solution could be several fold. It could be connect to a different location that takes away that forecast of congestion, lower your contract demand so it takes away that congestion. There's different approaches to address that congestion. If we have made certain decisions and now we're a year or so later and we're starting to see that our forecasts are inaccurate and we're going to be bumping up against actual congestion, that's when we would move forward with that Section 15.2 exemption application to, because we're not planning to have ongoing congestion under N-0 on the system for either a connection project or a system situation. So it's more due to the timing and the unpredictability of forecasting a future state that we would use that type of an exemption application, if that helps answering your question.
Yeah, I think it does. I think I can follow up later on. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben. Oh, we have one more here from Colin. You can go ahead, Colin.
Perfect. Thank you. Question, I think, is similar in some respects to Ben's question. The 15.2 provision in the legislation is fairly broad and affords the ISO a fair bit of discretion on how to use it. This is really helpful. What we've seen today gives us a sense of how the ISO is thinking about that provision. My first question is, has the AUC adjudicated any previous applications on 15.2 that provide the ISO with direction on its use? And then maybe the second question is, the information we've got on 36, page 36, the plans to resolve reasonably anticipated congestion. Does that process of defining that application, particularly with respect to timing or preferred alternatives, does it differ in any other way from how you plan other transmission projects?
Okay, so there's two questions there. We'll start with the first, as far as any AUC decisions on the application of exemptions or 15.2 exemptions. I'm going to pass that to Amir because he's been at the ISO longer in this space. And so I don't believe there has been any specific or project specific Section 15.2 exemption applications that have been decided upon by the commission to provide any guidance in that space. But Amir, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong.
So I think in some of the decisions, whether related to 15.2 directly or other application, the commission has had some definitely discussion regarding the Section 15.2. And that is in alignment with what we presented today, that it is a tool in our toolbox when we have a congestion beyond what is reasonably, it's an excess congestion, it's a tool in toolbox. So we've had some decision and pointing to 15.2 exemption, but in general, like, I'm not sure what is the detail of the question. In general, it's been in alignment with what we presented today, Colin. If there is any specific that you are looking for, please highlight that and then we can talk further.
Yeah, so the direction then that the commission has provided with respect to 15.2, was it generally to say the ISO has more discretion to use this tool, or was it providing sort of prescriptive input to the methodologies that the ISO was proposing?
Yeah, and my answer is subject to check, but generally it's because at the end of the day, a Section 15.2, it's really depending on the case that we are talking about. There has to be a discretion. So at the end of the day, it's something that it's in the toolbox and at the ISO's discretion when appropriate should be used. So that generally it's been around that. But again, this is subject to check. We can look at that internally, and if there is any further information, we can provide.
No, and that's very helpful. And I think that last comment sort of therein lies some of the uncertainty, I guess, and we'll find out ultimately when a 15.2 application goes to the commission. It will be very project specific, but what you've laid out here today around how you plan to use congestion assessments, the plans to resolve the reasonably anticipated congestion, and especially that timing, that's all subject still to adjudication by the commission on whether they see that as an appropriate use of the provision and whether it's within the bounds of the legislation.
Yeah, at the end of the day, sure. we would file that for commission approval. So.
Yeah, as with just about anything we as an ISO decide upon for new infrastructure or Section 15.2, the commission's there as our regulator. We would file those project-specific situations through the regulatory process and take guidance from any specific decisions. So what we're trying to accomplish here is provide directionally, this is our thinking and our approach and how we're planning to move forward. We'd be open to any feedback from you on directionally our approach that we've communicated here. And as always, you know, we can debate based on your feedback. And if we can land on alignment, then great. If not, then the regulatory process is to go through that debate through with the commission. And that's the natural process to hammer out some of these debates in that manner. So
that's Colin,
you had a second question and I lost it after the first one. So can you repeat it and we'll see if we can answer that one.
No problem at all. I think the first question was sort of the priority, but the second question related to essentially the methodologies and the ISO's use of the discretion to define an application. And I know this will be very project specific, but that methodology in determining what is the preferred option, and particularly defining what is the timing of that, the 15.2 application and project to relieve congestion, does that process differ in any material way from how you plan other transmission projects?
Okay, I'll take a shot at your question. I'm not sure I'm understanding it, and maybe we can take it offline if I don't get it through this answer. I think we tried to communicate that connection projects and the potential forecast of congestion related to connection projects is we're going to use the same tool and the same methodology to try to forecast congestion levels with a connection project as we would with the system projects and more broader regional congestion risk as generation in a particular region increases. So same tools, same methodologies, calculating the percentage of possible congestion in the future based on those two scenarios. So for a connection particular project, it's a little easier because you don't have as many assumptions. You've got the actual connection project, you've got what's existing in the region today. You'll have some ideas to what possibly new transmission is being planned in that specific local region and possibly what new generation is potentially connecting. And so that would be a tighter study for us from a congestion assessment perspective to try to forecast if there will be congestion as a result of that connection project or not. And if there is, how large and what the percentage of that congestion might be and when it might occur. So, and we would use that in our analysis and decision-making on, do we need to move with infrastructure? Does the connection option work? Is there a different option that we need to consider? And I think we would be in that conversation with the market participant, obviously, as we work through that analysis and share the results of that in the decision-making.
Okay. I think that's helpful. Thanks.
Okay.
I think what I can understand or draw from that is it will be very project specific, and particularly the timing of relieving that congestion is going to be a bit of an iterative process. But suffice to say, there will be applications likely made that prescribe a certain period of time where there's going to continue to be congestion. What that time period is to be determined.
Yeah, so I think what you're saying is, look, if all of a sudden a new project comes into the connection process, and that market participant is committed and able to progress that project fast enough through to energization of that plant before we can bring infrastructure, be it an interconnection or interconnection and system to address the congestion, then there's going to be a period of time where there's a risk of congestion occurring until we get the infrastructure in place. And it's that risk of time where we would decide whether we need to bring forward an exemption application to deal with that time period, or the market participant makes some decisions so that we don't have that situation of congestion in the area.
Maybe one follow-up question, and I know I'm sort of monopolizing airtime here now. Is there ever a situation where that preferred alternative does not include an upgrade and results in indefinite congestion that fall within perhaps the bounds of a 15-2 application subject to adjudication?
Yeah. You used the term, is there ever a situation? I'll answer that this way. There could be. There could be a situation where we're in a region that there's a connection project and the probability of congestion is quite low, and we see even if it does occur, it's going to be a very marginal level of congestion, then we may make the decision as an ISO at that time to go, look, given the low probability of that congestion and the low magnitude risk of that congestion, we are going to accept that risk and deal with it more in a real-time situation because we can't support the infrastructure to deal with that low probability, low level. We may choose to do that and take forward an application in that situation. So I'd suggest that that'd be rare, but I wouldn't say never.
That's great. Thanks for all of this information. It's been very helpful. Thanks for hosting. That's all my questions.
Yes, you're welcome. Amir, did you have anything to add to that?
No, I think you covered it. Thank you.
Okay.
We have a couple more in the written Q&A, Dennis, if we want to hop over there.
Oh. Okay, thank you. Dan, how was the 0.5% for acceptable congestion determined on a forecast basis? Was it specified on statistical analysis, the inaccuracy, the input data, or assumptions, or some other basis? Okay, again, I'm going to reiterate that 0.5% is not acceptable congestion. It is just a study level that we have set to help guide us as an ISO to go, okay, we didn't want to set a milestone trigger based on 0.001% congestion in our forecasted future studies and our forecasted future simulations of 8760 hours, given all the assumptions, both from generation load and so on. So we just felt a bit of a incremental above zero was appropriate to start with setting a milestone trigger for construction, recognizing our end objective is to meet the regulation of 100% congestion free. Because that's what we're targeting to achieve, given the regulation. So it's not acceptable. It is just a buffer in study accuracy and simulation. And no, we did not do a detailed statistical analysis as to the inaccuracy of that. I essentially made the decision. We will start with 0.5%. It's a small, I think it's about 40 hours a year or something like that. It seemed like a reasonable buffer, just given that it's a tool to set a future milestone trigger for construction. It's not intended to set a level of acceptable congestion that we're prepared to have on the system. So hopefully that answered your question, Dan. And I'm sure, you know, in regulatory processes, we'll debate that 0.5%, however much we choose to debate it, but that's where we started it and it wasn't statistically based. Novell, relieving congestion is costly to the ratepayers. We are worried about the increasing rates of congestion relief projects, especially in a stagnant or even dropping provincial load. What is the ISO's congestion assessment process that ensures the large costs of these projects provide enough benefits in the long term and are in the best interest of the ratepayers? Novell, obviously we understand that we've invested a significant amount in transmission over the past 10 years, and that cost to ratepayers is important to us as well. And we are working to strike a balance here between future incremental costs and ensuring that our current market construct of open access and a competitive market from an energy perspective is enabled based on the regulations that we have in front of us, which is what guides us as an ISO. And that regulation is pretty clear that we are obligated to have 100% congestion free under N minus zero and 95% under N minus one. And so what we are doing here is we are trying to bring probabilities of that congestion into the decision-making versus just having deterministic ways to drive the timing and decision on new infrastructure so that we can more effectively have confidence we're triggering construction and triggering need for infrastructure when we're confident that we're going to be bumping up against those regulations of 100% congestion free under N minus zero. So this is a risk management approach and tool. We are not in the stage in this jurisdiction of currently trading off energy market prices and our prediction of what those would be as a result of enabling generation to come to our market against the cost of transmission. That has been inherently done in the regulation with the factors that we have in our policy and regulations in this province to guide us. So we're trying to manage costs and the timing of them to need and enabling competitive energy to get into our market based on the construct that we have here in the province today. If we want to have a conversation and a debate around the current construct, I think that's obviously a different conversation where the government and the policymakers need to be in, along with all of us. And I'm expecting that'll unfold here should the government move forward with consultation on a transmission regulation review.
Okay, no other questions or raised hands right now?
Okay. Well, hopefully this conversation helps to provide stakeholders here with a direction of where we're going and that we're trying to bring some improvements to optimizing the transmission system, recognizing our obligations that we have as an ISO. And we are open, obviously, to any questions you may have as you think about this, and you can do that in a number of ways. You can contact myself directly if you would like. You can ask questions through our stakeholder relations question. You can send an email there, and we'll continue to try to bring forward these types of sessions as we mature in the process and get more clarity and confidence. But we are absolutely up for feedback because we're starting with the process and the methodology and trying to optimize going forward. So thanks for your time. Appreciate all the questions and have a good rest of your day. And we'll talk soon, I'm sure, in some avenue or another. Take care.